You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Thursday, 8 August, also known as Friday. Tonight, late Fed balance sheet data. Previous was $7.18 trillion. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Kieran Whitten here from Anchor, of course. JSE results yesterday, modest results. But is it offering value if we see increased trade going through the exchange? Keith McLachlan, rotation into small caps in the US. And then Vahin Olafia, he from Mazars. Saab oversight of crypto. They've got some challenges there. There are plans to try and solve it. This show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from Wall Street Journal. Supermicro computer stocks dive 20% despite soaring revenue. Server maker more than doubled its revenue and boosted its profit last quarter, but the market didn't like outlook. News 24 MTN warns it has plunged into a loss, but it has inked a new deal for its Nigerian towers. Mobile operator warned after the close yesterday that currency woes in Nigeria were going to plunge into that loss. Morning markets, US was red, S&P 0.75% down, NASDAQ 1.2 lower. Over in the east, it is green. Sydney's up 0.67%, Tokyo up 0.2%, Hong Kong 0.7%, and Tencent almost 2.5% higher. Commodities green, only by a little, but we'll take it. Gold, $2,429. Brent, $78.54. Platinum, $9.27. Palladium, $8.81. The Rand is $18.37. Bitcoin, $57,500. And top 40 opening call, a red open, 110 points or 0.15% to the downside.
MoneyWeb now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Train now with Kieran Whitten, of course, he from Anchor. Kieran, appreciate the early morning time. As I mentioned in the intro there, the JSC results, it was 6 months ending June. Modest. I mean, headline earnings per share down 0.2%. I suppose we can call that flat. A forward PE of around 8x. Looking at the results, I mean, the JSC's been struggling. They've got competition over the last many years, which for the first time really in their life, and volumes have been down. But your take on it, on the results and perhaps opportunity, and what a stock that is cheap.
Good morning, Simon. So the results, disappointing, I think, is what we took away, but largely expected, of course, from the market. And I think one of the key things that I take away is that revenue historically was very correlated to trading activity in this for the company. But this correlation is starting to break down as management are looking to diversify their revenue streams. But nonetheless, large portion still comes from their equity trading. And trading revenue was actually down 12% for the first half of the year. This was largely due to the election uncertainty, but then after the new government was announced, activity picked up significantly into Q2, and that has helped put some positive sentiment back into the share. And then also over and above the competition that you specified, and another trend in this for the exchange industry is the shift to private deals rather than public listings due to the various factors there. And the JSE has been investing in other services in response to this. And their non-trading revenue, again, I highlight, has increased quite significantly. But overall, this is a typical SA Inc. share. It's a proxy for South African economic growth, as well as investor sentiment. So if investor sentiment starts to pick up, which it obviously has done in the last quarter, then we should start to see this feed through to the bottom line of the JSE, which has struggled for quite a few years for that long-term bottom line growth. It, of course, is a cash cow. But I think once we start to see growth in the bottom line, I think then there could definitely be an attractive opportunity. But until we see that, I think we are still The dividend yield is not quite enough to appetize us yet.
But I like your point, Iran, because of course what the JSE's been doing for the last many years is saying, you know, we don't just make money from trading revenue. So the one line in the results was value trade in our equity market recovered in Q2 with the trend extending into July. Good news. But of course they've kind of, undone it by the fact that they've got other sources of revenue, which is good, but it means that increased trading volumes isn't going to necessarily boost as much as one would hope.
Yes, for sure. So I think there are two dynamics at play there. The one is the trading volume, which we do think will pick up as long as our government says they're going to, or does the things that they say they're going to do. But then there are other levers that management can actually pull. And the medium-term outlook, I think because of that optionality that has crept in, makes the share more attractive than it was 12 months ago, let's say. So I think we quite like the fact that actually it is diversifying into other aspects. And of course, there's the competition that you mentioned in your intro. But that, for the meantime, there's still regulation that is protecting the JSE largely. So we are watching that closely. But obviously, the network effect is at play here, and the JSE is still the dominant. We do expect to still be the dominant player.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't see that disappearing anytime soon. And there is the FSCA at some point will bring that best execution rule in, which will help the, is it A2X? But at this point, it's not there. We'll leave it there. It's Gavin Whitten from Anchor. Appreciate the early morning time.
Your money knows that reaching new heights means turbulence. When you invest in Stanlib's Global Multi-Strategy Diversified Growth Fund, your money can withstand the unpredictable ups and downs caused by day-to-day market fluctuations. Because our partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management gives you access to a broad range of global strategies. Seek more returns at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting now with Keith McLachlan here, of course, CIO at Integral Asset Management. Keith, appreciate the early morning time. You run two small cap AMCs, actively managed certificates on the JSE, a local one, but also an offshore one. And I thought, let's chat the offshore. We're hearing lots of talk around rotation. Everyone is exiting tech. They're moving into the smaller caps, Russell 2000, the S&P 600, although I notice both have come back in it last week and this. Are you seeing this supposed rotation, or is it truthfully such a giant market and perhaps almost too much offering there to really become visible?
Morning, Simon. So perhaps the best thing to do is to talk through a normal cycle and then let's talk through what's happening now, and the listeners can hear the contrast. So a normal cycle is the world in recession and it's deep and dark and horrible, and we start to see a light at the end of the tunnel, and the first thing that rallies in terms of the risk assets, the first thing that rallies are actually U.S. small cap, because the recovery tends to be in America and the world follows, and from that, the U.S. small caps are the most exposed. They rally hard. The recovery becomes real in terms of data. The large caps and developed markets rally. And then when the large caps get long tooth and the recovery is global, well, guys shift trickle further down into risk and emerging markets rally. But in terms of emerging markets, what happens is emerging market is already a risk asset. So global investors will buy the large caps in emerging markets. Then eventually, late in the rally, when emerging markets are expensive, they'll look a bit deeper down and you'll get a small cap rally in terms of emerging markets. So in other words, in a normal cycle, developed markets and particularly U.S. small caps rally first, and emerging market small caps rally last. They're actually a lagging asset, whereas American ones are a leading asset. What's happened in the world is a huge desynchronization. Economies are doing different things. The Fed's walking around this year muttering under its breath. You know, we have Canada and Australia and BOE in England cutting rates. Yet we have Japan hiking rates. We have China as the second largest and a very serious economy in the world, really just faffing around in the property sector, not partially stimulating, which is effectively like an interest rate cut, but not quite. So there's a lot of desynchronization. And at the same time, we've had AI and big tech capturing a huge amount of the capital and really rallying hard. And the moment you look at S&P 500 X big tech, it's like a very, very different picture. But what happened at the start of July was we had a brief honeymoon period, for lack of a better term, where non-farm payrolls came out. They were really good. It showed a strong economy, but the Fed starting to mutter a bit louder under its breath about cutting rates. They go, well, the economy is doing well, rates are dropping, or potentially about to drop, and looking around, and big tech, I mean, trees never grow to the sky, so at some point the valuations are just too high, and we had the Russell 2000 rally about 10% in a week or two, whereas the S&P was flat, so there was huge small cap outperformance in America. But the interesting thing to note is that is late in the cycle. If anything, the small caps in America in July traded like an emerging market, because we're late in the cycle. It's not a question of whether the economy is recovering. It's a question of how long this bull market carries on for. So it was a very strange move across July that, in fact, is almost largely given back. So if you have a look at the iShares Russell 2000, which is the ETF tracking the small cap market, on a one-month rolling basis, it's flat. Yeah. Yesterday's movement. But at intra-month, there was a 10% movement. So it's been significant what's happened. S&P, on the other hand, is down 6%. NASDAQ's down even more. So the big tech is rolling over, and that's dragging the big cap indices over. In short, in the AMCs who we run, I mean, we've actually had a wonderful year so far. I like to think as a stock picker that quality and good companies, irrespective of market cycles, get rewarded. But the nature of the beast is beta also plays a strong role. And small caps have been performing this year, albeit it's the big caps, particularly the AI, that has actually been carrying the market higher.
Yeah, and of course, as I mentioned in my intro, Supermicrocomputer, they're also sometimes falling 20% in a day. But I liked your point about US Inc. I hadn't actually thought of that. And of course, small caps, I mean, you know, it might not necessarily be, you might be digging around in Europe as well. It's a large universe. But I'd never, you know, I kind of think of, I don't know, Levi Strauss, which was a global player. But truthfully, there are a lot of, you know, there might be big small caps by czar standards, but they are very much American focused. Much as we talk around our local small caps being SA Inc., there is a preponderance of US Inc. in that space. So, you know, keep an eye on what's happening there.
Definitely. I mean, like you work through the portfolio we put together in terms of, and just for the listeners, the global AMC's code is UUGSMC. And you can find that on JSE and trade into that on the JSE. And I'll give you an example of two different ones. Our biggest holding company is the Sandoz Group, which is spun out of Novartis and is the largest producer of biosimilars and generics in the world. It's basically a Aspen, but an Aspen on the global stage would be considered a small cap. Mm-hmm. Sandoz is bigger than that and cheaper than that. And in fact, as a global player, although it's a small cap and it's unbundling out of Novartis, it falls within the universe and it's wonderfully defensive. It's got great tailwinds. So that sits in there. And then a contrast, and that's a global defensive stock.
Yeah.
Contrast that with one of, so in the Russell 2000, one of the top five holdings is Sprouts Farmers Market. Now, it wasn't a number of years ago, but it's done really, really well. And we've been holding it the whole time in this portfolio. And it is it basically runs a set of a health and attribute driven, call it a theater of food farmer style market, retail shops in America, and it's the same size as arguably Spa in South Africa, but America is so big that makes it a small cap, and in fact it can just grow in America, going into other states, building up density in terms of DCs and the like, and attracting further customers, and can carry on growing for many, many, many years. And it's done really, really great. But obviously, that is 100% tied into the American economy. So there's such a spectrum of stocks in this space that, yes, there is macro that drives them, but there is also very much asset-specific or company-specific things that one has to select.
Yeah, I take that point. Absolutely. Another theater of food. But it is, it's going to be macro. And of course, we just forget how big that American economy is. 300 people and a quarter of global GDP. Keith McLachlan, CIO, Integral Asset Management. Appreciate the early time this morning. And that's our question today, LinkedIn and Twitter. You're buying into cheaper U.S. small caps. Perhaps you think U.S. tech is over. Perhaps you've always had some small cap. Or maybe you stay with tech and you're convinced by that story. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn and Twitter.
If seagulls were hardy-dars who could afford to retire to the coast, what kind of bird would you be? Would you soar over the savannah or chase summer around the globe? You see, even when you stop working, your money won't. When you invest in Stanlib's fixed income funds, you can retire earning a regular income off your investments. Invest for more certainty at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm Dennis Vian Olofia, partner in fintech and digital assets lead for Viz Mazars. Van, appreciate the time today. Crypto, I think we get the regulation challenges in many ways with crypto broadly, blockchain as well. But there's a bit of a hole in terms of the South African Reserve Bank is they don't consider it legal tender and they don't really have any sort of legal oversight over it.
You're 100% right. I think as it currently stands, the South African Reserve Bank do not view blockchain-based digital asset as legal tender, and therefore it's not governed by the same regulations that are being applied to South African rands and the externalization of South African rands and the purchasing of foreign assets as well. So this is about to change in the near future, but my view is this is definitely going to affect the cryptocurrency market as a whole in South Africa, and especially those crypto asset service providers in South Africa.
I want to come to changes, but I mean, the one key thing is that I could buy a crypto asset in South Africa and I can externalize that just by sending it to an offshore exchange. I could put it in a hardware wallet and fly to the Olympics. I mean, it is that easy, and I can easily exceed the R1 million single discretionary allowance for the R10 million foreign investment allowance.
Yeah, I think there's two aspects to consider. I think one being from a natural person and one being from a non-natural person's perspective. So you rightly pointed out, if you want to externalize South African rands by purchasing a foreign currency such as US dollars, you need to utilize your single discretion allowance or your foreign investment allowance to do so. But currently, there's no limitations in place by local cryptocurrency exchanges actually limiting the amount that you are able to send abroad. So you can externalize effectively billions and billions of rands by purchasing cryptocurrencies on a local platform and just, I want to say, externalizing this in air quotes to a foreign platform. And there's no restrictions in that sense. I mean, the same applies to if you want to buy it on a local exchange, put it in a hardware wallet and offload it in a foreign country such as the US or whatever the case may be. You can very easily do that as well. But I think where the trick really comes in now is with companies and trusts that actually hold these accounts with virtual asset service providers in South Africa, being cryptocurrency exchanges, and how they will be treated going forward. Because, of course, you have the ability to externalize funds within the threshold set out by the SARB, but companies and trusts do not necessarily have these allowances. So if you have an account with a crypto asset service provider locally, effectively what that would mean is you won't be able to externalize any of your crypto assets to a self-custody solution or send it to a foreign platform in another jurisdiction.
Are these the key changes that are being proposed? I mean, obviously, I mean, part of the thing with crypto and blockchain technology is, I was going to say it's new. I mean, Bitcoin's almost 15 years old. But in the big world of central banks and currencies, this is very, very new.
Yeah, I think it's interesting to know as well. I think there's about 25 countries as a whole around the world that have these exchange control regulations. And effectively what they are trying to do, or they say the South African Reserve Bank rather is trying to do, is to impose these existing, often called the exchange control regulations, on the asset class itself, which is quite new. And you rightly pointed out, the asset class was designed to facilitate peer-to-peer payments over the internet without the need for the intermediary. So effectively, it could move money as quick and as easy as information moves over the internet. And now they're trying to effectively restrict that, so there isn't an excessive amount of funds flowing out of South Africa using blockchain-based digital assets.
You mentioned the non-natural. You mentioned changes coming from SARB. Is that the current sort of focus that they're taking at this point, or they're looking at natural persons as well?
So they're looking at natural persons and non-natural persons. So effectively, what's going to happen if you want to buy cryptocurrency, you can do that on a local exchange. If you want to send it to a foreign exchange, you need to use your single discretion allowance, your foreign investment allowance. The same applies when you want to send it to a self-custody solution, you need to apply those allowances. Now, effectively, that will be it for natural persons. And there's also discussion between the externalizations of assets and the internalization of assets as well. For those engaging with bot trading, for example, that high-frequency trades between local and foreign sources. But for companies and trusts or non-natural persons as a whole, it is going to extremely limit the amount of transactions that they are able to do or facilitate transactions across border. Effectively, what's it going to mean is if they want to engage or get exposure to the asset class, they need to have an account with a crypto asset service provider, and it will only be in the constraints of South Africa. So they won't be able to use any non-crypto asset service provider that's not licensed in South Africa, and they won't be able to self-custody it as well. So the question being is, what is this going to have on the implications of the liquidity in the market as a whole? But I mean, we'll have to see how that plays out in the long run.
Yeah, and you mentioned bots then. I hadn't even thought of that, of course, because there's, in many cases, it's the arbitrage, different prices, for example, Bitcoin in South Africa or another market, be that at one point in time it was Japan or it could be the US markets. And I imagine they do significant number of transactions.
You're 100% right. Look, I think that at the end of the day, it's difficult because, I mean, even if you think about an individual's point of view, so there's a lot of people exploiting the arbitrage within, or let's say the arbitrage market between price differences, let's say of Bitcoin in the US and Bitcoin South Africa, and essentially sending or externalizing capital, buying Bitcoin, sending it back to South Africa and liquidating it here for a profit. Now, the individuals use a single discretion allowance and your foreign investment allowance for those types of trade, but in addition to that, what we've seen is as well as individuals also engage with these bot trading or additional trades as a whole. Now, the issue what this creates is effectively as the legislation currently stands. So if you buy Bitcoin on a local exchange, export it to a foreign exchange, and if you already used all your allowances, as soon as you swap your Bitcoin for US dollar, for example, I'm not referring to US dollar backed stable coins, but if you swap it for US dollars, that technically, as it currently stands, triggers that externalization event. And a lot of individuals engaging with bot trading aren't paying attention that they are contravening these exchange control regulations as it currently stands. And they could put them in the firing line with the South African Reserve Bank if they start to dig into this information. But of course, I think one of the blockers at the end of the day is the SARB can't freely get access to those types of trades being executed on the likes of a Kraken, for example, which is a US-based firm.
Yeah.
So there are certain limitations and requiring that manual intervention to get the required data.
We'll leave it at Vihan Olafia, partner and FinTech Digital Assets Lead for Forvis Mazars. Appreciate the time. That's it for today. We're chatting with Viroon Lajawala yesterday from 91. The case for not using passive when investing in EMs, emerging markets. We asked you, do you use passive for your EM investing? Almost two-thirds said yes, it's just the easiest. A fifth of you said no EMs for you. The rest said nope. You agree with the logic. It needs to be active. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again Monday. Sappy results.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.